bought us so right. Are you feeling it? So loud, and it's so wide, till we're all drunk. Then it's so fast, then it's all over.
Go hard, go sleep, wake up, get sober.
What a great night. And it's so loud, and it's so wide, till we're all drunk. Then it's so fast, then it's all over.
I thought you were both going to skive off today. Did you go see that film, Greg?
I went last night to see it. I went last night.
Oh, Greg doesn't have a job where he can just slope off at lunchtime and watch a film.
I really don't.
Well, mate, you teach kids, so you could just take a whole bunch of kids down there.
Yeah, and it's
I thought about it, actually. Like, I had a bunch of kids. Like, I have my nieces here today.
It's only M-rated.
Yeah, well, I just figured, you know.
Do you like Brad Pitt? He was so dreamy in Legend of the Fall. Come and watch a Brad Pitt film with me.
He was also dreamy in Fight Club. Oh, hang on, wait. Sorry, that was weird, wasn't it?
Your slip is showing.
As it turns out, I did not see World War Z. I call it World War Z. I know I'm the only one who does that, but I just figure, you know, that's what it is to me, Z.
World War Z. I'm going to.
Well, it just sounds wrong. World War Z. I got to say, it sounds less impressive. Like, if you can imagine, like, some dude going, you know, Zed's coming. Like, Zed.
Like, Bobcat Goldthwait from Police Academy 4. He played Zed.
So I think. Isn't it like World War One, World War Two, not World War Three, but World War Z? Isn't that the joke?
Okay.
Is that not what they're going
to do? But hang on. But you haven't seen this film, surely.
No,
Greg.
I haven't. I must admit.
Greg hasn't. Greg has not seen this film because I very specifically remember when this trailer came out, he said, I don't want running zombies. I will not be seeing this film.
Well, like a politician, I tell lies. don't tell lies. I changed my mind due to the circumstances. I felt that Australia needed me to see that film to
you
move us forward.
You are the John Kenneth Galbraith of this podcast.
I am.
That went straight over my head. I have no idea what happened then.
Quick, go to Wikipedia.
But you know what? Your laugh was very convincing.
Thank you. Thank you. You've
been practicing for years. I went last night to see World War Z or Z.
Where'd you see it? Did you go gold class, or do you just muck in with the?
I muck in. I like to get in with the cheap Cineplex ones because you know they're cheap. I go, I'm not paying more than $8.50 for a movie. None of this.
I bet you don't even shower before you go.
No. I specifically run and just get sweaty just so I can mix with everyone else.
Oh, I go to platinum class where they offer you blowjobs.
Wow.
You do not want to be receiving a blowjob when a zombie jumps out of you.
Well, they have to block the blowies ears, make sure they don't leap off. What are we talking about again? Hang on a minute. Wait,
we've gone off track.
We're talking about. So I haven't seen it. I will see it. I would say I don't got issues with this film. I mean, I suppose I do because it's just so far away from the book. It's not funny. But on the other hand, the film's a film.
Mm.
The book's a book. You couldn't film that book.
Exactly right.
If you had some, I don't know, some eccentric billionaire who was willing to drop $10 or $15 million on a 6-part HBO series.
That would be the best thing ever.
With who's that guy there was? Ken Burns. You've got Ken Burns to do World War Z with lots of still shots and those really like cool interviews where it's just like pure background and you've got the person and it's just like you don't see the interview or anything. That would work, and it, you know, it would
get
totally
the guy
get
Seven Up.
It would get possibly 2.3 or 4 million viewers on HBO.
But we would rave about it on a podcast.
We would just
go, oh my god, and like Natalie Behensky would just write recaps up. Recap.
The Twitter would light up with the hashtag Grey Wedding.
That's right.
Brad Pitt farts out 2.3 million viewers every day without even think about it. There's 2.3 million right there. So it was never going to get the Ken Burns HBO treatment. And as soon as you walk away from that, you walk away from the book.
Exactly right.
So I reckon I got this theory that everybody who plays in the zombie playground needs to bring something new to it. I did that story, that crowdsourced story a couple of years ago, Here Be Monsters. And what everybody who contributed to that story brought was some fiery flying zombies.
I see.
No, they were like, I own it and I stand by it. Fiery flying zombies, they totally fucking worked in the context of that story. Mm. The swarmings, like everyone thinks that Pitt has brought fast zombies. He hasn't. Like, you know, fast zombies have been around for ages. They're bullshit. Mm. They're utter bullshit. But that's not what he has brought to this zombie banquet. He's brought a swarm zombies.
They do. But it's, what's interesting, JB, is watching the movie, is that's not really a major part of the movie. That's just one scene of the movie. That's not a big part of it. They're just fast zombies. And then at one point they
have a hive mind, don't they?
They're just driven.
No, I think they all have one purpose, but they're not linked together. So and their purpose is, okay, big spoilers. Spoilers.
Okay, let's just warn the spoilers. My understanding was the dude who made this film was obsessed with insects and he wanted his zombies to behave like insects.
Yes.
He wanted like emergent behavior, like flocking and swarming.
Yeah, there is a bit of that. Basically, from very simple premises. So the premise is basically, from what I could work out watching the movie, you get bitten. They don't try and eat you. They just bite you. Yum, 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 yum. They bite you as much as they can all over. And then 12 seconds later, you're a zombie and you're running pell-mell and your only interest in the world is to bite someone else. That's it.
So they're like a virus.
Yes, and it goes, so you bite one and then they bite someone else and you won't, and so you're all running just flat chat to bite as many people as you can. So from that simple rules, bite someone else, transform, bite someone else. That's it. And then all the rest kind of, and they go towards sound. They like sound.
How does anyone even survive that? Because there's there's a shitload of survivors in World War Z, the book.
Mm.
There's like whole, I'd have to go back and read it. I'm actually thinking of going back and getting the audiobook because it's apparently an awesome production. They got like half a dozen actors, and I was listening to a couple of minutes on Audible today. It sounded awesome. But in the book, I think the central Rocky area of the US seems to be largely zombie free, and I think they've cleaned up the West Coast as well. Mm. I don't see how, given the sort of transmission vectors you're talking about here, which just bite, 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 12 seconds later on, you're part of the bitey party.
Not when there's people around, but
no, I don't see how anybody
contained
could survive
to
that.
Those cities.
Yeah, they don't leave the cities very often.
So if there's like little hamlets up in the mountains,
I show that in the movie. Actually, they go to Wales. They're like trudging through Wales, like the two main actors, and there are people just looking like scared out of their windows from their stone houses. They're not boarded up houses; they're just houses in Wales. So the Welsh people are like,
not boarded up.
No, they're not boarded up.
God, they deserve to get bitten.
Well, yeah, but there's no one there to bite them. Like, there's no zombies there. They're not sort of swarming.
There will be in a couple of minutes, the rate these things move.
Well, yeah.
But they stop.
Yeah,
that's the thing. Yeah, they're not keen on travel.
No.
They're zombies. They're keen on biting.
Yes.
And staying still and waiting for something to bite.
And it's stimulus. They need sound stimulus to set them off, or visual stimulus to set them off.
I'm going to say something you may not agree with, but I think that this was a really good version of the World War Z book. I don't think it's much of a departure at all. They had to have running zombies in this because there has to be some sort of quick danger in a movie because you've only got 2 hours to tell that story.
Mm.
You can't have the wonderful shambling zombies because those take time to trap people.
Mm.
Like something like The Walking Dead can have nice shambly zombies, but you need fast zombies in a film.
Yeah. I think it was a total departure from the books. You can't. You might as well not. You might as well have called it Swarm Zombie Swarm. You know, swarm, zombie, swarm. And it really had nothing to do with the book.
I love the Isaac Asimov iRobot stories. Mm-hmm. And then I saw a trailer for iRobot where Will Smith is running around with a shotgun and flipping over desks. And I was horrified, absolutely horrified, watched the film, loved it. Not because it was a story from any of the books, but it could easily have taken place in the universe from the books. This was a story that could have easily taken place in that universe, in the books,
that's
where the world is taken over by zombies. Mm. It started
except for the whole, 12-second super accelerated.
It has to be super accelerated.
Standing
in
around,
a movie.
Not doing anything.
That was, yeah.
And that doesn't change it. There's a big... The danger is lots and lots of zombies.
There's that whole thing at the front of... it's like in the first third of Zed, the book, which is the Battle of Yonkers, where they've put a bunch of army divisions somewhere outside New York, and they've got them like they got them all wired up with that sort of, you know, cyber warrior gear. So, and it's an utter fucking disaster because they use modern weaponry on this sort of undead plague that comes out of New York, and it has no effect whatsoever. And the network-centric focus of the modern military actually spreads the panic. It's a great metaphor, actually. Like the panic spreads before the Solanum virus spreads. So if those zombies don't really move, that's an incredible inversion of what happens in the books, because it's the slow show. I disagree that you can't have a slow shuffling but fast moving zombie plague. I was watching Contagion the other night, or, you know, the Outbreak, I think. You know, the one with the plague monkeys?
Yeah, oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. And I kept not... You know, it was disappointing in that only a couple of thousand people died. And I kept waiting for the monkey plague to just break out and run wild everywhere. And in the end, it didn't. But it could have. And it, not because people were running around, like, chomping on people after 12 seconds, just because it's a virus. It doesn't take that much to transmit it. So I don't know. I'm in two minds. Like, I like the swarm idea. I like the idea of the emergent behavior with, like, massive swarms of millions of like, Zeds. But I don't see...
Zeeks.
Well, I suppose that's how. That's it, isn't it? Like, as soon as they had that swarming behavior, they then had to cripple them somehow as a narrative device, because if they broke out of the cities, that's it. It's fucking all over Red Rover.
And that's, they are around, but when you can fight them one at a time, and, you know, a person with a bat can take one down, and it happens in the movie. But when there's like 10 of them, you're in trouble, of course, because 10 people trying to kick your head in, bite your face off. And then when there's a million of them, you're in deep, deep shit. Mm. Like, it's, well, you're talking about the transmission point then, John, that they actually, they have a really good part in that, where Mr. Pitt gets blood in his mouth. A zombie jumps him and he gets blood in his mouth, and he's like, oh, and like, he kills the zombie, and he gets up, and his family's right next to him. He's on top of a building, and he's looking terrified because he's just got infected, he thinks, anyway. And he runs to the edge of the building, leans out over the edge of the building, and counts to 12. So, and I went, that's brilliant, because he doesn't know, and he doesn't transform for reasons which we won't go into. But it's that really beautiful moment of he has to keep his family alive, and he knows that he'll go berserk and kill them. So if he leans out over and goes berserk, he'll flip himself off the edge and be crushed on you know, 10 stories below. And I went, oh, someone really thought through that nice premise, and it was a good character moment. You know, a clever man protecting his family, not by blowing his brains out.
Mm. It recalls that moment, which didn't end well at all, in 28 Days Later. When the dad and the girl, they've been rocking the zombie apocalypse. They're doing it really well. And then he gets, I think, gets pecked in the eye by an angry crow.
Yeah, the crow is actually about 10 feet above him and is eating something.
It's eating a zombie.
A drop of blood drips from its beak and lands in his eye.
Yeah. And he warns them to get back, and then he gets all angry, and then the John Wyndham shout out commando guys just shoot him.
Yeah. I love the fact he's pushing his daughter away. Like, I love in 28 Days Later, when he realizes it's happening, and he's like, you got to look after my daughter now. Like, you got to take her and look after her. And like, what's wrong? And he had no time to explain. He's just like, and I just love that handing the responsibility over for his daughter to someone else. That was just that heartbreaking. I gave her a big hug and then got rid of her. And I was just like, oh, that gets you right in the emotions, that does.
Yeah, you can't have a zombie flick without motions, mate.
Yeah, that's right. You got to have a couple. And they try and do that in World War Z. They try and cut back to Brad Pitt's family having a hard time, and it's, I find that a bit flat, to be honest.
My understanding is that they're just like on a sort of military yacht cruise.
Pretty much. But there's a lot.
And you know, the only thing they're dealing with is you know, they can shower for a minute, but no longer than a minute. Because the hot water runs out, and the admiral can't scrub.
There's a lot more to it, I think, underneath the surface. I think there could have been a lot more, and I think a lot's been cut because it's kind of, there's lots of things like all unnecessary personnel needs to leave the ship, and like families get herded off, put onto helicopters, and sent back to the mainland to die, and they're saved because Brad Pitt's their husband, you know, woo, and their dad, and he's just awesome, and he's like a space UN ninja or something, and it's. And it's that terrible...
That's what the N stands for.
United Ninjas. And it's this beautiful... the military men resent the wife and the kids. Like, they're eating food. And these soldiers make snide comments behind them that, you know, oh, well, you're sorry the food's not very good, but, you know, unfortunately, we've only got enough for the military. And I went, oh, I wanted to focus on that. Like, I wanted an entire hour about the... Like a Battlestar Galactica style, you know, the population versus the military kind of stuff. But, of course, you can't.
Well, it's interesting because that you can see the sort of the really fuzzy outline of the original story there because, again, spoilers, but this time for the book, one of the things that they, I think it's like an ex-apartheid era South African general comes up with this plan that they'll just let certain cities fall.
Mm.
You know, they'll distract the zombies by letting them chomp on Pretoria, for instance. And while they're chomping on Pretoria, we'll put together this absolutely awesome 18th century style militia with, you know, flintlock rifles and no network centric warfare whatsoever. But in the sort of the internal logic of the book, that totally works. And it sounds like that scene where they're kicking people off the boats is it's almost a distant and really fucking dim echo of what happened in the book, but it's there. It's an echo that they decided they were going to sacrifice a certain amount of humanity so they could save everything else.
It's not the world working together, of course. It's just different countries, and you hear about it in the. I don't want to give too much away, but you don't see it. But just comments made about how North Korea survives and how this country survived and how that country survives, and like they everyone's trying a different thing. Some people building walls, and some people are killing their population, and everyone's trying something different because there's no centralization. It's just, oh my god, zombies.
Well, I thought the movie didn't do a very good job of capturing the zombies from the book, but I thought they did a really good job of capturing the humans' response to the zombies from the book.
But you'd be dead, though. I mean, as JB made a comment before, there's no way anyone... well, they made a comment that... There was an infographic shown for like half a second saying estimated death count, like 4.5 billion people dead, like zombified. So you're like, good God, out of 7 billion people, that's not bad. If you have 4.6 billion zombies wandering the planet at speed... I don't know how anyone would survive, to be honest.
If you're going to apply logic to a zombie film,
and when they come, John, like they jump, like there's lots of zombies coming through windows, like just glassing, like suddenly right now where we're standing, there'll just be zombies coming horizontally through windows and biting us. Like they're not messing around. They're not like hello, tap tap tap. They're like just running. 28 Days Later style. They're pretty much... I thought they were rage zombies to begin with, but they make a very big comment about, oh, they have no circulatory system and you've got to shoot them in the head. Shooting in the chest just puts them on the floor and then you've got to tap them in the head to finish them. So, yeah. I liked that they have scenes with noble soldiers. I don't normally like noble soldiers, but they actually have these kind of American soldiers holding out against the invaders kind of thing. And I really enjoyed this camaraderie. There was like a group of guys all working together. And I really enjoyed that scene, which I was very surprised about. But they were personable and doing the whole kind of, okay, we've got to go down this tunnel and do this, you know, and press the breaker to start the magic door that'll get, you know, that kind of thing, get everyone out. And then they all, like, get picked off one by one because they're all sacrificing themselves in heroic and noble fashion. I really enjoyed that scene. So some really kind of, oh, I cared about that guy and now he's been eaten. Oh, man. there's quite a few things like that. Not as much as you'd want. And sometimes there were red herrings for characters, like important characters suddenly weren't important, except, you know, Brad Pitt's pretty important, obviously. But, yeah, they tried their best. I was entertained. There were a few scares. It's no gore. Boy, it's bizarrely goreless.
That's one of the problems that your, like, zombie fan hardcore guys had problems with it is the lack of gore.
What is wrong with them?
I saw it explained the other day. I was reading some idiot's blog, and they actually managed to put the sort of ABC logic down as to why you need gore in a zombie film. And when I read it, I thought, yeah, that sounds logical. And as soon as my eyes drifted off the screen, I thought, what a fucking idiot. You don't need the gore. You just, as long as you can create enough tension from the implied threat of the situation.
Although the hypocrisy of Mr. Brain splattered against the wall, Birmingham, saying that.
The way they do it in World War Z, of course, is... In cities, you can't see past the corner, so like you're hearing people screaming and dying in the distance, and explosions, but you don't know, and or you can hear it coming louder and coming towards you. You can't see it, and that, or it's in the dark, in the rain, so you can only see like 3 feet ahead of you, and you know that's pretty scary. And there's always this, or they're in an apartment block, and everything's closed down again. Once again, all these you know narrative reasons why you can't see the guy coming to kill you. It happens a lot, actually, now I think about it in that movie. There's actually lots and lots of it, like walking through a lab and not knowing who's in the lab, actually.
Yeah.
That's quite weird.
So they set it up at the end. I haven't seen it, but my understanding is that in that strange way nowadays, you can sort of watch a film by osmosis, by, you know, just following the tweets and the trailers and, you know, the sort of the outrage blogs because they didn't follow the bystander. But my understanding is the whole thing is set up at the end for a potential sequel. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. It's crazy. I find that really disappointing, actually. But I don't want to say everything about it so people can still watch it and get something out of this. But it's not just, it could be a sequel. This is pretty much a prequel movie. This is pretty much the movie before World War Z, the movie, really. World War Z 2, or you know whatever you want to call it, will be the actual World War Z movie. This one was just the outbreak, basically. And in one way, that's good because you go, yay, Brad Pitt saves the universe. On the other hand, you're like, what did I just... Really? I just watched 2.5 hours of the beginning of the movie. Like,
this is where I'm at a distinct disadvantage, having read the book but not seen the movie, because the way that Brooks solves the zombie problem in the book just isn't going to work in the movie. They completely reorganized the U.S. military along like 19th century lines with you know sort of mile long regimental firing lines, a bit like in Zulu actually. That great scene where you got the guys kneeling in front, the guys standing, and you know, shoot, kneel, shoot, kneel, and the shuffling horde just shuffles on, and it totally, given the internal logic of how zombies work in the book, it totally fucking works. Like the zombies will shuffle towards the fresh meat, and they will just keep coming on and coming on, no matter how many of them are being cut down, and you know, as long as you're willing to stand there and choose your target and shoot them between the eyes. You will eventually thin out the zombie horde.
Tiring, though.
Obviously,
and
that
you get thirsty.
Well, in fact,
Pepsi.
There is a great scene, like one of the, you know, the sort of Studs Terkel style interviews towards the end of the book describes a firing square. They put these guys out in the middle of a plane somewhere, and the zombies came to them and they shut them down. And they actually talked about how they had psychologists wandering up and down the line, and occasionally they just tap someone on the back and say, come on, ouch, come, you've had enough. Yeah. Or they let them take a break for 5 minutes to get a drink of water. Because none of that will translate to the story world of the film, simply because of the swarming hyper-accelerated zombies.
I could tell you why it would work, but it would totally spoil the last spoilery bit of the film. So I'll hold that off. Why they answer it. They do answer this question, like how are they going to fight these super-fast swarming zombies? There is a reason. That's the end of the movie, really.
Really hard to do a segue when you ignore what I'm saying, JP. Nice cold Pepsi.
I know. Goodness me. I know what you're doing, Dan. I was letting JP finish. There was a part... I just could not believe it. There's a part where Mr. Pitt has solved all the problems and he's, you know, he's got the magic MacGuffin that's going to save the day, and he stops to have a Pepsi. He takes it from the Pepsi machine. He lovingly opens it. He drinks it down in big, hearty gulps, and then he kicks the Pepsi machine, spilling all the cans on the ground, attracting the horde to his location. And I went, I have not seen such blatant product placement since the...
Twister.
No, since Casino Royale, which was... what was the name?
With the Heinekens.
No, not the Heinekens. Not that one. No, in Casino Royale, it was the... What was the name? Verity, whatever her name was. She goes, oh, Rolex? And he goes, no, Omega. And she goes, oh, beautiful. It's a lot. And just like, seriously? I mean, I love that movie, but I still... Natalie and I still make that joke. I'll walk into a room sometime wearing a watch, and she'll go, Rolex? I go, no, Omega. Oh, beautiful. It's just that it's such a dumb... Some advertising agent... And someone put it into this movie. Like,
yeah.
It's just terrible. It's shocking. Blatant Pepsi advertising.
At least in Twister, when they quite obviously had to put Pepsi in and make Pepsi save the day by cutting up cans to attached to
right.
the little balls.
Yeah.
Like, they were all Pepsi cans, but they did slip a couple of 7-Ups in there, which is also by PepsiCo.
Is there much else? Is that the only product placement, or is there...
That's the only one. My brain went, you're kidding. But that's the big one. Mr.
Do you reckon the punters even notice it, though? I mean, you know, you got your big throbbing brain. It's just
why, thank you.
Sitting there sending out phased array pulses looking for this.
Yeah, no, I noticed it too, John. I noticed it as well.
Breathing idiot sitting in the cinema doesn't even... Just, oh, I wouldn't mind a Pepsi.
They would have known because I think I went... What? Ha-ha! Like that, very loudly. So all the scared people who were worried about Mr. Pitt getting his beautiful face eaten off suddenly had the weird chuckling nerd in the background go, Pepsi. So, yes, I brought it to their attention. But it's in every movie nowadays. I saw one where the actor or whatever holds up like a white can or a green can or a blue can, and then they can add in or a white packet or a coloured packet, and then they can actually CGI in the product placement later on the can or whoever buys the box. So you can go, oh, no.
The thing I love product placement for one thing, which is the totally unnatural way that it forces actors to hold chocolate bars and eat them too. Like they hold them with that strange way, as though they're making a sort of shadow puppet dragon with their fingers, and you know the face of the chocolate bar is always turned out, and then they sort of have to porn star style crank their neck around into what looks like an incredibly unnatural and uncomfortable position to sort of, you know, take the top off it.
But it's always a nice sharp bite, not sort of a cock gobble type of motion.
You get a long, loving shot of Mr. Pitt's neck as he's like chugging down the icy cold Pepsi Cola.
So I just really hate it when people inject their sponsors so directly into their product.
Yeah. It's really, really.
Speaking of which,
if you were interested in reading the excellent Professor Brooks World War Z, you could get it from Riverbend Bookstore in Bulimba, which is. Kevin Rudd's the Prime Minister's favourite bookstore. You'll often see him down there of a Sunday morning having a cup of tea. Don't approach him.
No. He gets startled.
He does get startled. I've got a zip.
Yeah. He's down there with a little letter opening, just stabbing all the books in the spine.
That's very good.
That's an awesome bookstore. I mean, Brisbane's pretty lucky. It's got like half a dozen really good independent bookstores. And one of the things that surprised me when I first went on tour to the US was just how few independent bookstores there are. They've just been totally buried by the chains. And, of course, then the chains get buried by Amazon. Mm. So we're pretty well served by all the indies here in Brisbane land, but
the best of them all is
Riverbend Bookstore, Riverbend in Bulimba. It has a fantastic restaurant and cafe. It was one of the first bookstores to realise that Amazon couldn't send coffee down Ethernet, no matter how fat your pipes were.
Even
you actually
NBN.
Had to go into the bookstore to get your coffee. So
we're waiting for the National Bean Network.
There. Ah, very good.
And sushi. They do really good sushi too. But they have great books. I often find myself wasting, if not hundreds, then, you know, maybe $100 every time I stick my head in there. They're awesome.
And if the punters listening to the podcast go to Riverbend Bookstore, would the any chance that they would find a signed copy of a certain John Birmingham's books?
They could. In fact, if they want, they can ask. They just say, can you get JB to sign this? And I will, take the underpants off my head.
Release the Prime Minister from a headlock.
Walk down the hill and sign your fucking book for you at Riverbend. I'll do that for you.
That's it. Look, hey, not only will he do it, he'll do it grudgingly, and that's the best way to get someone to do something. The pain, it's the suffering that he'll put into it. Ah, damn it. That's fantastic. There you go, listeners. That's something for you.
So, JB, do you like ladies who can kick your ass?
I do. I totally do.
So come on down to the Riverbend Bookstore and kick JB's ass if you're a woman. Wait, no, I didn't say that. Wait, hang on. Sorry, we've moved on. I didn't realise. I apologise.
No, we have. Yeah. We've left him behind. I introduced the kids to Long Kiss Goodnight over the weekend. It's an awesome film. I must admit, I'd forgotten about it. I've written this sort of stump speech that I give at cons and, anywhere that geeks gather. I'll just be there talking about female action heroes.
Jamie said,
I'll go down to, tabletop gaming. This guy's in a garage. I should just knock on the door. Oh, I'm JB. Female action heroes. I give this talk, and it starts off with Leela from Doctor Who. I acknowledge Diana Rigg, and I acknowledge Emma Peel.
How could you not acknowledge Emma Peel?
But for me, it starts with Leela and those boots and that leather skirt and that knife. And she was the point at which ladies in Doctor Who stopped tripping over and spraining their ankles.
And started spraining other people's.
Just picked up a big rock and bashed the shit out of the nearest Dalek. And it was a good thing for Doctor Who. It was a good thing for humanity. Anyway, I sort of go from her up to Buffy. Buffy's very important.
You've kind of... Girl Clumsy's going to be very upset with you. You've missed Xena.
I have. I forget Xena too.
Xena is pre-Buffy and...
And she's got that whole lesbian thing going with the little blonde popsicle, which is...
Gabrielle.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, Gabrielle. That's great.
It's very important not to miss because a lot of the things that Joss Whedon did, I'll be very careful how I say this because libel is an important thing.
Isn't libel Buffy, print?
Oh,
this is slander.
I'll slander until the cows come home. It's fine. A lot of the things that people really like about Joss Whedon's Buffy stuff, when you watch Xena, you go, oh, wow, they did it earlier. Maybe not as well. Maybe not as polished. I'll admit that.
Maybe.
You have an example of this outrageous slander?
Singing episodes way before the gentleman, the one with the gentleman.
I must interpose. All long running TV series eventually have a singing episode.
Ooh, even back then?
Yeah, even back then. Okay. Drew Carey was like, they pulled one out out of their ass every year or so.
Yeah, fair enough.
What Simpsons?
Killing the female protagonist and then bringing her back just to, to have
everyone. Starsky and Hutch, 1974.
They killed the female protagonist to bring her back.
They killed Starsky or Hutch.
Look, just because a man wears flares doesn't make him a woman.
All over the city, one of these men will die tonight. I didn't even watch the show because it wasn't on the ABC and I wasn't allowed. But oh my God, Starsky and or Hutch will die tonight. As it turns out, their heart stopped beating and then they came back and it was all cool. It's not unknown for the protagonist
You're not going to give anything to Xena at all. Nothing to Xena. Poor Xena.
No, Xena is cool. And I, you know, I like.
And she looked like she could hurt someone. That's the point. I'm basically now I just realize I'm not speaking anymore. Girl Clumsy is speaking through me at this point. I just realize I am just a puppet to someone else's words.
I just ask? And you know, please feel free to be embarrassed by this question. Mm. Did you start going out with Girl Clumsy because she looks like Xena?
Well, it helps. You like a woman who can hurt you. What can I say? You say you like being beaten up by women. So do I. Not that she beats me up. Maybe that's slander.
It's emotional damage that, that Girl Clumsy hands out.
But Xena looks like she could kick your ass. Where a lot of them are like Buffy's magically powered, and so she's a slender blonde chick.
No. Xena's like half god, isn't she? She's like a warrior.
No,
princess.
She's not half god. She's a person. She's got
like godly trilobites.
No. She's
Hercules.
No, Hercules is half god. No, Xena is just a woman. She's just a woman who...
An Amazon or something, isn't she?
But she's still a person. Not like an Amazon like in the DC Comics, like half god kind of thing. No, she's just a woman who was a warlord, became a warlord, and then changed her mind and became good. She's just a normal person who became very good at what she did.
Oh, well, look, you know, that's very impressive.
JB concedes that point.
But let's move on. You go from... You go from the point I was making about Leela to the point I wanted to make about Sigourney Weaver.
Oh, yes. Okay.
In Aliens. Mm, mm. And then to the point I was making about Buffy. Anyway, I'd completely forgotten about Gina Davis in Long Kiss Goodnight, which is it's a terrible oversight because that particular character, as far as I can remember, is the first real kick-ass female hero on the big screen outside of... I think that's just it. Like, after her, you get, you know, almost every Angelina Jolie character, for instance. You get the Steven Soderbergh film, which is really awesome, Mayhem. Mm-hmm. God, who else is there? You get Black Widow in the Avenger films. There's, you know, if I had to sit down and pull them out of my ass, there'd probably be about a list of 12, 13, 14 really, really awesome kick-ass female characters.
La Femme Nikita.
La Femme Nikita. That post-dates... I'm sure that post-dates Gina Davis.
Because that came out... That's the same director who did Leon or The Professional. And that's about 3 years. That's early 90s, I think. Or late 80s, thinking now.
I wonder if these characters are supposed to inspire women who watch them or to be sort of someone to be looked up to, or whether any human being, male or female, who just beats the shit out of and stabs and shoots and garrots and chainsaws in half someone.
Can't you make it sound so tawdry?
Yeah, I do. It wasn't that hard, oddly enough. But, I mean, you look at a protagonist like the girl in Hard Candy, who isn't like a ninja type person, but she extracts her revenge on the guy, or something like Basic
Instinct.
Isn't she
like a sociopath? Like, I must admit, I haven't seen it, but I'm willing to leap to conclusions that she's a manipulative sociopath.
Basic Instinct, where the protagonist isn't Basic Instinct using?
She was using her feminine powers for evil,
her wiles.
Yeah,
well,
where Gina Davis is using taking
she's just
over.
Kicking
She's using man powers.
She's using what's considered normally a masculine, entering the masculine arena and kicking your ass with it. Yeah. So there's a different way of doing it.
The interesting thing about watching this film on the weekend, and really not having seen it for, you know, 20 years, I guess, was the fight choreography. Because we had, I had just gone through all 7 seasons of Buffy with the kids. They got to a certain age. They're old enough to watch this without, you know, keeping us up with nightmares. And so we started them on season 1, and, you know, it'd be a weekend thing. Like on a Sunday night, you'd watch an episode or two. It was nice. You know, it took about 6 or 7 months to work through. Which, we tried the same thing with Xena. Didn't work. Yes, that says something. Yeah.
Maybe it's because Xena's got too much fantasy involved, and
maybe Xena's shit.
Oh,
maybe Xena is worse than very worst of Baz Luhrmann's kitsch nonsense.
I am surprised that Girl Comedy did not smash through the window horizontally, World War Z zombie style. I'm absolutely shocked by that. Actually,
I am terrified right now because she's gonna hear this at some point.
The interesting thing about Buffy is the choreography. It's the first time I can think of, certainly in TV, that you had quite spectacular and advanced fight choreography for a female character. And it's actually, IO9 had this fantastic 30-minute clip that a stuntman, or maybe a friend of the stuntman from Buffy, had put up. It's 30 minutes of background footage, like interviews with just crew working on it, and it's sort of and you know, her stand in, and it was really interesting to see them choreograph these fights. So they put an awful lot of work into it. You go back to Long Kiss Goodnight, and you don't see any of that hyper complicated martial arts kung fu bullshit. Gina Davis just swings big fucking haymaking punches and just punches the crap out of blokes.
Yeah. But then that's a product of the time too, isn't it? I mean, it was only once Jackie Chan started to break out in America that fight scenes became more than shooting from behind crates.
No, I don't know about that, actually. Like, if you go back to... you can certainly see... you go back to those early 70s flicks, you can see the influence. You actually go to the Bond flicks, and I think the Roger Moore period, if you look at the fight that Sean Connery has in the elevator in Diamonds Are Forever, it's one of the most realistic and brutal, bruising fights you will see in any of the Bond films, and including that stairwell fight in Casino Royale,
with
which
the machete
is right up there with them. that elevator fight. If you go look at it on YouTube after we finish it, it's fucking brilliant. It's magnificent. You jump forward a couple of Bond flicks to Roger Moore, and he's got like ridiculous karate hands and flappy little kung fu.
He's
moves.
Totally third doctoring it. He's the third doctor.
Yeah,
he's just like, ha ha, and then like karate chop.
Yeah, I actually saw John Pertwee described as the manliest doctor ever.
Oh yes. Oh yeah. He was the doctor he didn't cross. That was like his thing. Yeah. He would.
And it was all that
punch you would drive
or Martian karate or kung fu or whatever it was. But yeah,
you got to be careful of that night doctor too, because he may end up feeding you to the zombies.
Oh, very good. Yeah.
Tying it back.
28 days later. Nicely done. Yes, very good.
Yeah, well done. Yeah, nice.
I'll edit that bit out.
Nice circular. But to return to this long-winded and not particularly interesting point, if you go back to the 1970s,
I'll edit that bit
you'll
out.
See a lot of influence of the Bruce Lee movies creeping into Western fight scenes. And then for some reason in the 80s, it sort of drops out.
Yeah,
and you don't see it, and then it picks up again in the 90s, and you get these like super. It's almost the superheroization of otherwise quite normal human characters, and Bourne is an example of this.
Not a woman who did it first, but a man who did it first. I think is in Lethal Weapon, Riggs, Mel Gibson's. He was, because he had spooky martial. He was a white guy who would use martial arts on you and break your arm, and everyone's like, he can't be stopped. He knows martial arts. And nowadays, you're like, that's just commonplace in movies. But Riggs' special power was martial arts. He was like a black belt.
I thought Riggs' special power was being a completely off the charts psycho.
That too. Another point, though, for me is I want to take this to the next step and go into computer games just for a second, the female protagonists, and that's in Mass Effect. Mass Effect is... Because I played Mass Effect.
She's not a female protagonist.
No, well, Commander Shepard.
She's a big dude.
No, I totally play as a female ship.
I'm Fem Shep. I'm a redhead of Fem Shep.
Is that an option?
You can play as a woman. And what's really weird, I have a big connection.
And what's
to,
more, you can make the other ladies like you.
You can in Mass Effect 3. Pull it back then, John. Pull it back.
Escapism, eh?
But what I... And also the male in the third one, if you're the male Shep, you can actually... actually make the men like you too. That's a big thing too. But you could, I had a big connection with my female Shepherd character. I forgot that she could be a man in other people's games, because she, for me, oh, she is an ass kicking woman, and but she's a woman and she kicks ass, and that's how I saw her. And then someone went, well, hang on, no, she's also a man. And I went, hang on, they couldn't have written it differently. It's the same thing. So are we only just putting what we think is what is masculine and what is feminine on these characters?
Yeah. Look, it, there's a point to be made. It's not one that I care to agree with, but because I really like my kick-ass female characters. But we had this discussion at the Burger a couple of years ago, and God, Catty, I think it was saying she actually doesn't like kick-ass female heroes because to her they're just men in bras. it's just, you know, it's – in fact, who is it somebody described it. We're talking about talking on the weekend about fantasy novels, and I don't know what it was. God, what's his name? Raymond Feist. Mm. He was in town recently, and I had to host him in a couple of gigs at Brisbane City Library. And if you read the female heroes in the Ray Feist fantasy novels, they're actual women that spend lots of time talking about stuff and thinking about emotions and things, and he doesn't do what he calls chicks in chainmail. And there is, you know, I guess there is an argument to be made against the idea of chicks in chainmail, but it's not an argument I really, you know, I want to listen to, because I really dig chicks in chainmail.
And with that bombshell, I think it's time to get a drink.
Yeah, I think so. Who's shout?
No, it's me.
It is. It's your shout.
I haven't paid for a drink yet.
Fine, I'll get this.
Oh, God. Go, Clumsy's here. Run!
It's your round, dude. It's your round. You're hanging at the back of the bar. So just bounce. Like you're banging in the back of your car.
You have been listening to Spartacast. John Birmingham's new political splatterfest, Stalin's Hammer, can be found at momentumbooks.com.au. The binary system of Greg and Dan can be heard talking about science, comedy and ignorance at smartenough.org. This has been a Smart Enough Bunny production. Halle Berry speaking.
Came to take you home. I trip lyrics like spits, spit lyrics like drips. In the arms of Licky Spirit with my miracle whip. Cause what I'm hearing's all shared on the lyrical tip.